Whether your beer is in a bottle, can, or glass, kick back and relax. It's Better on Draft.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 340 of the Better on Draft podcast. My name is Ken. Thank you so much for joining us on this late evening edition. It is Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern. It is snowing all week here in Michigan, so hopefully you have been safe. No accidents. You have gotten your beer to drink at home and stay at home, so everybody is nice and safe. Let's go around and see what everybody is drinking, starting with Wendy. Wendy, what do you got?
Well, I have this bottle of El Gordo Cookies and Cream. It's a 25%. No, I'm not sure. It's a limited release from the Good People Brewing Company in Alabama. I do have a beer saver on there, though, so I don't have to drink the whole bottle tonight. And to back that up, I also have a Back 40 Truck Stop Honey Brown Ale, also from Alabama.
Well, our international correspondent, Dan, what are you drinking?
You'll see the cans after, of course. I've got a Castle's Milk Stout, two-time winner of the Best Stout Porter at the World Beer Awards, and also my personal belief that it's the best beer you can have on cask.
That's some big words over there.
It is.
Big proclamations. Rob, what do you got?
I've got an old bottle I found in the basement called Genuine Article from Indiana City Brewing, a brewery which no longer exists, sadly.
Oh, boy.
Well, but this thing's a bourbon barrel barley wine.
For myself, I have got a nice can of Allagash White, which I'll be rinsing it down with a second can of Allagash White. And since we're not doing the news and we're just doing a longer regular show, I've got a can of Allagash White. So I wanted to get as up to 40 ounces as I could, as this is a episode 340. But I did go back, and while this is the official episode 340, do you guys know how many episodes of Better on Draft that we've done here?
Are we counting half episodes? And
oh, yeah. Episodes? Yeah, for sure. Geez.
And Arizona episodes?
Shoot, oh, there is just one. That was the one that we did.
Counts?
It does count. It does count.
Oh, boy. I'd say 370.
What about you, Wendy? I know you've joined a little bit later, but you were on one of the first episodes.
Are we including the news as separate episodes?
We are not. We are not. So okay. At least evenings or episodes that we've recorded.
So then I would probably say about...
You cut out when you said that.
Oh. I would probably say... No, I stopped to talking to think. I would say probably 380 or 390, maybe 400. With the
Rob, you're the newer guy, so your guess is as good as anyone's, really.
That's right. I'm going for the funny number, 420.
This is the 405th episode of Better on Draft.
Okay, we need to have episode 400. Get the Flying Buffalo vertical ready.
Yes, we have been doing this for 405 episodes, half episodes, special episodes, Michigan series episodes since October 2015. And the reason I'm bringing this up is so everybody is prepared. We will be going on our first ever hiatus. That's right. We will be taking a break, a much needed break from this podcast, from talking about beer, to kind of relax, reset, and see what we come up with on the other side of that. So this is going to be the last episode you will get from us for about 2 to 3 months is our guess. We're planning on coming back, but the website is still going to be going. March Draftness 2024 is still going to be rocking here in Michigan. So stay tuned for all of that, of course, on our Facebook page and our website, betterondraft.com, our actually newly changed website, betterondraft.com, thanks to our webmaster, Bill, for all the work he puts in there. With that in mind, after 400 episodes, the one thing that I kind of want to talk about is burnout. We've talked about burnout within the craft beer industry, burnout in nearly anything that you do, you're going to get burned out. Sports players get burned out from, you know, focusing on sports their entire life. Sales reps, we've heard from plenty of them talk about getting burnout from going, you know, from bar to bar, beer store to beer store. And for us, it's no different. We are definitely feeling it here. But the one thing that we notice within the craft beer world and burnout is that we're starting to see fan burnout. People not going to the breweries as much anymore. We just heard that the Spring Beer Fest in Michigan is no longer, only after 2 years. So do you guys feel a craft beer burnout? And not even necessarily specifically us following the craft beer world as we do, but just kind of like keeping up with the Joneses, drinking all the beers, going to all these releases. Do you feel that way? I'm going to start with Wendy.
Yes and no. I'm still always excited to go to new breweries. I have noticed that my friends are not as excited to go. That kind of puts a little damper on it. But I tend to be kind of a lone duck when it comes to that anyways, because I'm hitting breweries whenever I'm out and about and have a free minute. And that doesn't always coincide with what my friends' schedules are. But I have noticed, like, I was in South Carolina this past weekend, and I had friends that weren't beer drinkers, so we were showing them around the area in South Carolina we were in, and there wasn't a lot of breweries that we went to because they're not beer drinkers. My friends did manage to hit a couple of new-to-me breweries because they knew that that's my thing. But the last night I was there, we didn't leave the house. We just hung out and chatted and talked, and we drank some beer. We drank some Utopias, which was pretty fucking cool. But it just wasn't a big deal that I wasn't going to hit another brewery. I don't know if it was because I know I'm going to go back, because when I'm in a new city, I'm really excited about going to breweries. But I do know that I don't do as much as I used to do. And I don't know if that's left over from the pandemic, if it's part of the new, I hate to say the new normal because it drives me insane when people say that, but I mean, I kind of feel like that's where we're at.
I think when there is, it comes a time and point, which I think we're at right now, where there's not only decision overload, but option overload. We have so many options of places to go, beers to drink. And that doesn't even just include, like, when we were talking about craft beer in 2014 and 2015, like, Hopcat was a huge thing because you could go get all these beers at one specific place. But now you go to a Buffalo Wild Wings and there's, whether it's New Belgium or, you know, even some of the locals, you're still getting out of the 20, 25 taps, you're still getting 15 probably craft beers or crafty beers, whether it's owned by a major corporation or not. So I think the access to craft beer got so easy that not too many people it just got so easy that it became second nature. And now that it's second nature, the new car shine of it is kind of gone. Going to a new brewery isn't on the top of everybody's list anymore because there's already probably 10 breweries that are new that you haven't hit. And there's another 20 breweries that you want to go back to because you enjoyed it the first time. But Dan, you're out in Arizona. What's the outlook over there as that scene kind of changes while you're there?
So I agree with Wendy. I think it's a pandemic that did it. And what makes me believe that is New Year's Eve 2019. So going into 2020, right before the pandemic, for New Year's Eve, went to a craft beer bar right by my house, and it was wall to wall. If you weren't there early, you didn't have a seat. You could hardly walk through. After the pandemic, the place has never been that full. They don't even open on New Year's Eve anymore. I think something changed it with the pandemic. You see that at breweries, they're never really slammed anymore when previously they would be. One thing I would say here, being in New Zealand for a while, is I don't think that's the case here. Perfect example, there's a craft beer bar just a couple of minutes here in Christchurch from where I'm at, and it's always full. You go in there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it's full. You go in there at 8 o'clock at night, it's full. I think maybe just people in the US have gotten burned out, maybe because it's been going on for so long there. I don't know how long the craft beer scene has been going here. Like this beer I'm looking at, they opened in 2011. So it's been a little while, but yeah, in the US it just seems like, I think it's burnout and the pandemic helped that. And people realize there are different things you can do.
Let's get your perspective, Rob. You're over in Indiana.
Yeah, I would agree. There's some burnout there. There's some just we've got all these. Or okay, so craft beer, it started with like everything was IPAs. Like that was the big hop wars were going on and all that stuff. But then we got to the fruited Berliners, and those were exciting for a little while. And then those turned into like the slushies and all of that stuff. But now we're innovating with things like cold IPAs and I don't know, other like just made up stuff that's doesn't feel like innovation. It's not new. The seltzers might be the new stuff, but they're not really all that interesting to most craft beer drinkers. So I think that there's some of like when we were chasing all those beers, you know, got to get them all. We were trying all these crazy new hops, all these wonderful things. And then we were trying all these, oh, well, what fruits are they going to put in there now? Or this place, you know, did the fruit without the lactose. Oh my goodness. Or, you know, all that other, like those things that were going on. So there was more to chase. Now I don't feel like there's as much to chase. There's not as much payoff either. So mostly when I go out, I'm not going out for a beer. I'm going out to meet up with friends and do something, or, you know, at some other place where there is beer, or we'll meet up and do something at a place where there's beer. So we have, you know, something to drink while we do it, but I'm not watching releases anymore. Just like, I don't know. I feel like it's the whole landscape has changed kind of. We're settling into this is what beer is. And it is that comfortable thing.
That's not a bad theory that this is I wanted to look and see what the breweries were when we first started back in 2015, which in the US was 4,800 breweries. At the end of 2022, which is the data I have right now, I'm sure there's probably a 2023 number I could find, but it was at 9,500. So we're nearly double the amount of breweries from when this show started to where we are today. And I think what we all, well, at least for me, I should speak on behalf of myself and not necessarily everyone. But for me, at least, when I wanted to go to a new brewery, obviously I wanted to try all the new things. And there was an obtainable goal of trying all of these beers where you could have your standard places that you go to. Like, for example, me was Dragon Mead and Kunin. You could go and try all these different breweries when you were out of town, whether I was in like Charlotte going to EB, or if I'm in Grand Rapids and getting the chance to try like Grand Rapids Brewery in downtown GR. That was obtainable because it almost felt like everything was in reach. You could go. Remember the girl that did every single Michigan brewery in 2018 or 2017 or something like that? Like
Mitten Beer Girl.
Yeah, Mitten Beer Girl. Like those were obtainable goals because it wasn't too much. But now not only is there over 400 breweries within the state of Michigan, now a lot of those breweries you can go find on the shelf. And some of those breweries are self-distro to where you can go to some place like Zatuna Liquor in Rochester Hills, just south of M59 on Rochester Road, and you can get a massive amount of craft beer that is from all over the state, from out of state. Like you really don't need to go anywhere anymore. Like it was almost a specialty thing. Like you needed to go to a bar to get Bourbon County if you wanted to get Bourbon County. Now you could find Bourbon County on the shelf in, you know, half the stores today. If you wanted KBS, you needed to go to a tap release or a beer release or be there when it gets released. But now you can go get KBS every single day, including every single variant out there. The access
Remember when they brought back CVS?
I can literally leave this show and in 10 minutes come back with two bottles of CVS from the store. And it's not even like,
I could too.
It's not even out. Like, they don't overprice it over there. It's just nobody really cares about it anymore now that you can get it. And we were talking, I don't know if it was on the show or I was talking about going to the Public House over in Ferndale on like a Tuesday afternoon at 2 p.m. to get a 4-ounce taster of CVS, because that was the only opportunity at that time to go get it.
Oh yeah, you'd leave work early to go to.
Oh my gosh.
And to find a bottle of it? Well, especially outside of Michigan.
There were no bottles of it when they first brought it back, remember? They did all those whale spots where you could go and stand in line for 2 hours and maybe get a sample. But when they brought those bottles back, I mean, I drove to Grand Rapids and Detroit to get CBS bottles. Like, I purchased it at both places because I was so excited, and I still have some of those bottles in my cellar.
Now, isn't that the we saw that with Fat Tire. Ken was driving to Indiana for us because you couldn't get it in Michigan. As soon as it showed up in Michigan, it wasn't a thing anymore. I think that's the same type of thing that happened with CBS. Once you could get it in a bomber, you know, oh, it's there whenever I want it. And I think that's what happens with a lot of those beers.
A lot of those whales were first of a kind type whales too. Like that was maple syrup. That's crazy, right? And there weren't many of those around. It with the bourbon barrels and the BCBS. There weren't many of those around originally, but now they're kind of everywhere.
Our buddy Toots McCrog is in our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/betterondraft. You know, the access to all of these friends, groups, beer groups, trade groups, etc. Like, those are the kinds of places that really allow people to get even more beer. Like, if you have a friend in California now, whether it's because you were in a beer trade group on Facebook or on Reddit, or you're using like the Michigan Craft Beer Discord, like, you're able to get a lot of these beers that no longer, you know, were hard to get in the first place just because of locale. But as Dan said, like, when it becomes to your locale and it's natural and normal and you can get it right off the shelf, you tend not to get it anymore. And I've talked about it on the show. Like, I can't tell you how many times, like, I've seen beers that I'd never had before, and I just go to the Guinness or the Bell's Amber. Like, I'm like, I don't really care to try something new anymore. It's just, it's not on the top of my list of things to do.
To that point, so we do some trading in another Discord server I'm in, but there's one guy who shows up every year or so and asks for very particular years of Dragon's Milk and very particular variants of Dragon's Milk. And I'm just kind of...
Who holds on to Dragon's Milk?
That's the problem, right?
You just drink it.
You don't even age that one.
Well, it's year-round, too. You can get it literally everywhere.
Yeah.
What's right? This guy doing?
He's looking for some variant from a couple of years ago. Well, it's probably 3 years ago now because he's asked a couple of times. But yeah, I'm not sure. It's a big question. Some of
the variants they didn't redo again, so I guess I get that. I mean,
but they will.
They will. Oh my gosh!
To this day,
my favorite winter beer fest was the 50 degrees of the 50 shades of Dragon Smoke, where they had like every variant. They literally had like 4 or 5 trailers of beer, and they had every variant of Dragon Smoke. That was.
Do you remember that festival?
That was the festival that I lost my mitten. Yeah, and my friends lost me. They.
Is it because you just refused to leave the Dragon's Milk?
Well, I don't know why they didn't just come to try and find me at the Dragon Smoke section, because I always kept going back to that. But yeah,
you know, there's two tricks for getting lost. There's one is that you can bring a balloon with you, so that way people can find you from far away. Or another is to dress up as something obnoxious, so that way people can find you that way too.
That's actually really funny, because my friend had a beer hat that he wore that looked like a mug of beer, and he called it the Beacon. Right. So I would always be able to find him. Unfortunately, I followed the wrong beacon around for like 45 minutes at one point.
That's amazing.
I finally caught up to him and I was like, hey, and it was not him, which was kind of disturbing for me, but also funny because
I was the only 6 foot pickle at Winterfest. So I was a good beacon.
I'm sorry. I was on the Twitch channel trying to ban someone real quick for being a bot, basically.
It wasn't Toots, was it?
It was not Toots. Toots is still in there. But over on our YouTube page, of course, you can, when we come back, obviously, I don't want to keep selling it because we're not going to be here for a few months. But of course, YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook, you can interact with us as C. Giardina did. Saying Rob brought up a good point, guessing being a 6 foot pickle is a good point that they brought up. I don't know what point they mentioned. I'm all out of sorts here.
I have to say, I would like to see pictures of that. I'm just saying.
There are pictures of that.
So Dan, talk to us a little bit about your trip over in New Zealand. What's the craft beer scene out there? You've been out there for a minute.
Yeah, it's not too bad. There aren't as many, there's a lot of breweries, just not really in the CBDs of any of the cities. But there's a lot of craft beer bars. And the one thing that always sticks out to me, especially on the South Island, is it seems like you can get hand pulls everywhere. From your dive bar to your high-end bar, all of them typically have not just one, anywhere from 3 to 10 hand pulls on there available for you. And there's always something on tap or on cask with it there. That's the best thing about it, I do think. Also, the fun thing, I've been going to a lot of cricket matches out here. They don't sell domestic beer at cricket matches. There's a brewery that supplies all the cricket fields with craft beer. And they've got all types. So if you want your lager, you want your stout, or you want your session IPA, your double IPA, your hazy, any of that, they have every kind you can imagine. So that's a pretty great version of that as well, or what they do compared to what you see in the States when it comes to, you have your Coors Light, Miller Light, Mick Ultra, that kind of crap. And the good thing, too, is a lot of these places are in locations where there's a million food trucks and things like that. Everyone eats fish and chips and they eat mincemeat pies and things like that here. So the food's amazing. It's a great way to, gain 50 pounds if you want to pretty quickly.
So you guys were talking. You mentioned the craft beer bars, and I think that kind of goes back to the burnout point that I have a hard time going into craft beer bars now because they have so many options, but I feel like I've had so many of them, it's hard to find a new beer in a craft beer bar now. Do you guys find that?
Not here. I've had countless craft beers here, but... and the one that's right up the road from here specializes in craft beer specifically from the South Island. So, and it's changing all the time. So personally, I always find something I have, or if I go to a craft beer bar in Arizona, I'll drink a specific one all the time. I'm not always looking for something new.
And I'm the opposite. I'm always looking for something new. I want to try what I haven't tried yet. That still hasn't changed.
I do like new things, but I don't mind going back to the old stuff that I know I enjoy too.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. There's days you want the latest, and I've got an idea here. I'm going to put you guys in a moment, but you want the newest, the latest IPA. But there's days I just want to have, I want to have a Dragon's Milk if they have it. I want to have, a Speedway Stout, something like that. There's days I always want to have that. So maybe that's the difference. Wendy, if you're always looking for something new, it's possible going to a craft beer bar, you're not always going to find it. And I know you like different styles too. So that if you've tried everything there and they're not rotating too quickly, that can be an issue. But Rob, I want to go back to what you talked about IPAs, mm-hmm. always the latest and greatest. I've got one we can start up right now. We're going to start the latest trend. We're going to do a cold milkshake bourbon barrel aged IPA.
All right.
We're going to age it for 6 years. I'd be like, here you go. What do you guys think? Can we start that new trend?
So 6 years, I don't know. I have seen barrel-aged IPAs. It wasn't cold.
What about milkshake IPAs? Barrel-aged milkshake IPAs.
I don't think it was just a straight-up IPA.
Wendy would be like, I'm first in line.
Yeah. I'll start calling breweries to set up the collaboration.
So we can make it, yeah. What about you, Ken? You going to try our cold milkshake barrel-aged IPA?
No.
But you like IPAs now.
Yeah.
Hi-Li, in fact. So Hi-Li, they do a white oak aged on baseball bats. It's delicious.
Now, is it just aged on wood?
It might just be aged on baseball bats, yeah. Or aged on wood instead of...
Are they used baseball bats?
Yeah,
that's a good question. Or were they Sosa's baseball bat? Then you get cork in your beer, too.
I was going to say... There's so many additional flavors if they're used.
Yeah. That's such a callback. We're going to need Steve Bartman to interfere with that comment.
Well, he'd be the spokesperson.
He was years later.
I don't know where we are. Somebody's got to catch me up real quick. I'm sorry. I'm a million miles away doing other things.
Barrel-aged IPA. We're working on a collaboration.
Cold IPA.
Yeah, milkshake cold IPA barrel-aged.
Oh, this is funny. There you go.
You're both very dilated.
Yeah, you keep clicking it, Wendy.
I know. I'm sorry.
I mean, you could barrel-age anything, and of course, you can wax top everything. So craft beer, it's... For me, and I'll kind of put a little bow on my thought and kind of mixing together what everybody is saying. But as I go out at this point, I don't look for a beer I've never had before. I don't look for a specific beer. I just go in there. I look for the handful of styles that I like. I pick a beer and I just go on with my life. Like there's really it's the get off my lawn, old curmudgeon. Mentality that you guys have grown to hear.
Better half. That's a great beer.
That is a good beer. but for me, like, just give me the flavor, the profile, the style that I want, and I'm perfectly content. Like, I don't need to have a brewery I've never heard of with a beer name I've never, you know, a beer that I've never had, and I got to go check in on Untappd anymore. I think the gamification, which might be the best way to put it, the gamification of craft beer, I'm over it. I love drinking craft beer. And what's so funny is that I'm about ready to self-promote because even though we're going on hiatus, we're going to go brew a beer over at Eastern Market, which I got to go talk to Wendy about. So she goes there. But there is a Polish holiday upcoming called Dingus Day, which we will be doing a collaboration with Eastern Market, which kind of coincides with the Lent and Mardi Gras and Fat Tuesday holidays. So there's going to be a Dingus Day party and a Dingus Day beer with Better on Draft. I have no idea what kind of beer it is. I'm guessing it's going to be some type of pastry beer. So get ready for it. And get prepared for it. Plenty of people are in over on our YouTube page. We've got C. Giardina saying that it feels like when the craft beer movement started, it was very IPA oriented. And there were some really great and new and satisfying beers that came out of that changed what beer they drink. Big Rome TV is asking us where the 40s are at. We've been doing this for so long. I don't think any of us even realized it was episode 340 until it happened. But it's
before
10 minutes before. Yeah. If you go back to episode 40, though, we were drinking 40s. I think episode 200, we were drinking Twisted Tea by the bag. So we definitely get a little silly with all this. But there's just really nothing that gets me to want to go drink new beer anymore. I just want to drink what I like and enjoy it.
So all that said, I am going on a beer bus tomorrow and we are hitting one brewery I have not been to in Indianapolis. Oh.
Now, how many people are on the beer bus?
14. Well, 13, because one guy got stuck in Virginia, so he can't make it.
And to answer Wendy's question, which beer brewery have you not been to?
Garfield Brewing. I don't know much about them except that they're in the Garfield Park area.
Now, are you guys going to go into each brewery and each ask for a flight and piss off every single person in the world that works there?
All 13 of us will be doing that, yes. And we will get a picture of the 13 times 4 glasses on our table just for
I'm going to call ahead to every single one of those breweries and tell them to not serve you guys.
Yeah,
those
piss off poor... everyone, AK piss off Ken if he was there.
First of all, us and know that's going to happen.
Dan, if you were a bartender and 14 people walked in asking for what's the quick math, 84 tasters.
Yeah. Let's do it.
That for no. Fuck's sake. That's how I feel.
I will probably be getting a pint at each one and then filling a growler for drinking on the bus because we've got some time between breweries.
That's the way to do it right there. Heck yeah.
That is a nice thing when you can get a beer bus that is not really close. So there's like time and you're not just like getting onto the bus to get off in 3 minutes. Like the bus hasn't even warmed up yet before you are at the next place.
I can tell you our funniest one. It was like a 6-hour tour. And so we were supposed to go to Southern Indiana, basically down to Taxman almost. We didn't quite make it that far, but there had been high water and one of the bridges washed out and it was the bridge that we needed. So we had to reroute through an area with no cell service and Central Indiana.
Did you already cross this bridge after?
No, we had not. We could not cross the bridge. It was after our first beer stop and on our way to the second, which we did make it to. But yeah, there was a lot of like these backcountry roads with no cell service, and we were listening for banjos and stuff because it is that kind of country. But it was the best tour. It was like an hour between. It was supposed to be about an hour between each stop, but that one was a little bit longer.
My 40th beer bus was that way. We went to the west side of the state, so it was like a 2 or 3 hour drive to get there to the first brewery. And then we got to the first brewery and people went to the store to bring more beer to take on the bus. And it was a craft beer bus. So Steve Johnston was like, I've never had so much Bud Light on one of my beer buses before. Because not all my friends are craft beer people, but they wanted to come and celebrate. So
I think that's like the way.
40 people on our bus, though.
That's a massive bus, to say the least, like it's a school bus.
No, it wasn't a school bus. This was a charter bus. Yeah, we had to have 40 people to fill that bus out and make it so I didn't have to put an arm and a leg out for my own birthday party.
Yeah, I've been on a handful of like party buses and stuff, but like how many people were there?
40.
40 people. That's a lot of people to pay attention to. And like that almost gives me anxiety. Like if I had a 40th birthday trying to have 40 people celebrate with me and I'm just like, oh my gosh, like this is a little too many people for me.
It's 40 drunk people trying to get them back on the bus.
It's like herding cats.
Well, that's why you hire a company to plan the tour.
Get them back on the bus.
I texted him and was like, this is what I want to have happen. And he's like, we'll make that work.
Yeah, wrangling drunk people, I'm the one that gets stuck doing that in just my history because I've always, you know, as we told the story, Dan and I have known each other for 21 years now, and I was definitely of age when I met Dan and drinking beer with...
We're going to Auggies. Yeah.
I was going to Auggies at 16, drinking Boombas and Coors Light. So I had at least the experience of drinking by the time my friends started drinking. And after that, like they would get so drunk so fast that there was absolutely nothing I could do but have to be everybody's babysitter. Whether it was trips to Windsor or trips to Michigan State or frat parties or anything like that, or even house parties even that weren't even at my house. Like I always had to be the babysitter because somebody would always get so drunk, or many people would get so drunk so fast because it was like the one time they would drink in the month.
Sounds like it Nick's frat parties.
So,
oh my God, I can't tell you how many times I had to be like security at those places and I'm not even part of the frat. Go on,
Wendy. Speaking of Windsor, Windsor. There was one time my friends and I went over to Windsor, and I want to say that some of us were already 21, but the other ones were still under the age limit. So we went in a group of girls across the border, and we went to get into the bar, and one of my friends who was underage realized she didn't have her license.
That was the whole point.
Her friend that was driving was like, sorry about your luck, I'll see you later, and went into the bar. So she had to call her mom to come and get us and bring her license so she could get back across the border.
Now, wait a minute. This was obviously pre-9/11. You're telling me they were asking for your ID crossing the border?
No, you know, not crossing the border. She got across the border just fine. Well,
that's what I mean. Getting going into back the bar US.
She couldn't get into.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Because I was going to say, pre-9/11, you could do whatever you wanted. They would just be waving countless drunk people back into the U.S.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You tell them, and they'd just be like, hey, here you go. Truck full of people in the back, in the bed. They're like, what's everyone's citizenship? As soon as they all say, yeah, U.S., they're just waving them through. Those were good old days.
She's 19 years old. Do you really think that she wants to go across the border without her ID? Be like, oh, I forgot my ID, so I'm going back home. But we still needed a ride because her friends were like, sorry about your luck. We're going to the bar.
Ooh.
Which,
yeah, that's kind of crappy.
I was a different friend from that point on. I'm pretty sure I didn't hang out with that friend of hers again. But I'll never forget that.
I mean, that's Windsor is not that far away from the Metro Detroit area to where you're 20 minutes at most to the border you could have been back in an hour. And somebody could have driven back, and I'm sure that person would have bought them a slice at Pizza Pizza or paid for all the tolls and something at duty free. Right. That's some bad. Whoever had the keys to the car, that's not a good friend for sure.
True story.
Are you still friends with that friend?
I'm still friends with a friend who forgot the ID. I don't think I ever went back out with the person who was driving because that left a bad taste in my mouth. Like,
that's probably,
you don't hang your girls out to dry like that. That's not how it works.
No. You would want someone to do that for you if you had, accidentally crossed the border without your ID. I remember. So, fun fact, you can get into Canada without a passport.
Oh yeah, they don't care. It's the US that we
you can't get back is the thing. And and that is the amazing Border Patrol lady. My mother forgot her passport and she crossed the border and I had to go drive to my parents' place, get into their safe, get my mother's passport, then drive all the way across the border just to drop it off. But see, that's the kind of thing where my dad's like, all right, here you go. Here's, $150, go play at because my parents were at Caesars, go play it at 3 card. I lost that money in like 10 minutes. And I'm like, oh, well, I guess I'm going home now.
Sounds like your typical 3 card poker session, honestly.
I went and played at Motor City beginning of December. I sat down, I hit like straights, flushes, pairs, a good 12 hands in a row. And I literally pocketed all my money and left.
Not typical.
my dad just stayed and played for another hour and a half, and I'm just sitting there with the chips. Like, all right, you keep playing. I'm like, he was up, I was up, and he fed it back.
Yeah, I would have done the same thing because that's rare in 3 card. It's such a crapshoot.
No, you're too busy trying to play from behind in 3 card. Like, you're trying to catch up on like the first 3 hands that you lose.
Chasing your, that's what I mean. It's, you're always chasing your losses in that game, I feel like.
To Toots' point about the beer trolley in New York City, I don't know how many people, I don't know how hyped Cincinnati is, but it's a really good beer city. But they have a free streetcar that goes around, and one of the stops is in front of Rheingeist, another one's in front of Taft's. It goes down by the ballpark, which has Moorline Lager House. So really, you can do your own free beer trolley right there in Cincinnati. Just stay downtown somewhere.
Amazing. Yeah. Go eat some Skyline chili after you've drank 9 beers. Yeah. And then
they're gonna love you on that trolley.
I was at least go ahead.
You can do the same thing in Greer, South Carolina, but it's a golf cart is the trolley.
Well, that's even better.
That's even better. Can they do it as a one of those trains, like the mall train? Because I would be in on that.
That would be so awesome. I'm going to send them that in a message. You should try this.
You know what they need to do? Summer. They need to do like a Lime electric scooter beer or a brewery tour where everyone's driving around on the electric scooters. That'd be amazing.
On a Segway.
Oh, that's you. Get the Segway. What's that, Wendy?
I'm not allowed on electric scooters. My friends all think I would break myself.
I mean, they're pretty fun.
I have a hard time walking upstairs or, you know, in my driveway when it's wintertime. So I'm not allowed on scooters or anything that I could break myself on.
That's fair. A lot of cities are becoming really scooter friendly. Like Christchurch here is amazingly scooter friendly. Auckland is. It helps, especially with the extremely steep hills. Queenstown has scooters. You might kill yourself going down some of the hills there with how steep they are, and they can't make it back up, so you're screwed either way.
Is Auckland the city that has all the funiculars along the coast? Have you seen them?
When I stay there, I'm right by the harbor, but I typically don't go down there, so I'm not sure.
Okay.
The only place near the water I really go to is Queenstown.
One of the cities in New Zealand has the most funiculars of any city in the world. And it's a bunch of private ones that go to people's houses because they can't do driveways and stuff.
It sounds like that might be Auckland because it's such, you know, they even have the ferries and everything there. So it might be.
Okay.
For those who can't even spell funicula on Google to get a proper Google search, what is a funicula?
It's like a the cable car that you would see for a ski lift or something like that. It's gotcha. That idea. Yeah.
Okay. I can tell you every city does have them, every major city, especially on the South Island, because the mountains are so high. Everyone goes up there to just check everything out.
Toots talks about St. Simons and HHI. Have golf carts on the roads. There's Put-in Bay over in Ohio also does that where all the, well, you can bring your car to Put-in Bay, but basically everyone that kind of just takes the regular ferry to Put-in Bay, will rent a golf cart of some sort to get around for sure. And obviously when you're driving those, even those scooters, you can get a DUI or an OWI or whatever. So please, please be careful. I remember taking,
Ken Zane, don't listen to me.
I'm saying be careful. I remember taking the scooters all around Denver.
Very scooter friendly city.
Mm-hmm. All the breweries were spread out enough to where you needed to have some type, as much as there's so many breweries, they were still so far away. The only place that I've ever really felt a great walking trail was Asheville. But even like Grand Rapids, like you can hit two or three places and that's it. Whereas Asheville, you can hit, 25 breweries in the city, all within walking distance to where you can't even hit all of them.
So Indianapolis is like that and it's flat. It's wonderful. And I have a high tolerance for walking. Cincinnati, I think, is also an excellent walking city, but it could, because you have to cross the river if you're going to include Kentucky, and you should, could be a long walk between breweries over the river. And I don't think you're allowed to drink in public in Cincinnati. I never actually looked that up, but I just didn't do it.
Yeah. Most places I feel drinking in public is always a, it's obviously city by city, case by case, but even places where it's not legal, like as long as you're not being a dipshit about it, nobody really cares that you have like an open container. Like as long as you're not drinking, like one, being a dipshit, but two, like you're not taking a beer from a bar and walking out when you shouldn't. Like those are there are levels of quorum.
They're not cops standing in the bushes waiting for you to drink in front of the Ford Museum, Ford Library.
That's the nice thing about here. You can drink in public except in for certain areas. You go to a cricket match and everyone's like walking around drinking excessively, it feels like. And then the bars are open here until 4. It used to be 24/7, but it's very, and you can walk out with beers too. So I guess that's a big difference. Kind of like Las Vegas, if I remember correctly. It's been about a year since I've been there, but can't you walk out of the casino with beers too?
Yes. No glass, obviously, on any of the sidewalks. So most places, the little vestibule of all the entrances and exits of casinos typically have like a massive stack of plastic cups. Because the big doors will say no glass outside, pour it in a cup, and then you can go out and go.
I thought those were for chips.
Did you say 24/7?
What's that?
Did you say 24/7?
It used to be. Now it's still 4. Between 4 and 7, you can't buy beer at all.
4 still, I'm like. So you can take a nap for like 3 hours before you start back up again?
Yep.
Makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, there's not too many places these days that are 24 hours, except for like probably like Miami, New Orleans, that makes sense. Vegas.
Yeah.
Even so, like the last time I went to Vegas, like I had to just stop myself from drinking.
Well, yeah, you go to Vegas and you're watching people get trashy, and you know they're from the East Coast and they're drinking at like 10 o'clock in the morning. It's like you're going to be in bed at 4 p.m. and not wake up till the next day.
That was definitely
that exact experience.
Well, I mean, the last time when Dan, when you and I went to Vegas a few years ago, pre-COVID. Yeah. And I remember being up at 7 a.m., 6 a.m. at Binion's playing Pai Gow with all the Ohio and Michigan people. And we're all drinking Coors Light at the table. And it's just constantly being fed to us as we're playing. Like that's Vegas. You could definitely find your people, like the Midwest people, at 6 a.m. at the casino, like bright eyed and ready to go and take on the day. And the rest of the city is quiet.
Yeah, you're going to bed at 8 o'clock, even if you're not drunk. It's like, oh, I'm so tired. I'm like, dude, it's like 6 o'clock. What are you doing?
That first night, I definitely did not plan accordingly because I flew in, met you in the Strip. And I was just dead by the time we got to downtown, which was still like 10, 11 o'clock. Vegas time.
Yeah, by the time we got there, yeah, you're right.
But like I was up all day flying in. We were drinking all day. We went to the event and drinking and all the walking we were doing on the strip. Like it was just such a long day. But I remember the first time I was in Vegas, I was up until 5-6 a.m. Vegas time and then going to bed for just a few hours, taking a shower and doing it all again.
Best way to get used to the time is just staying up.
So when you guys go to Vegas, do you normally stay on the strip or do you stay downtown?
I have never not stayed downtown.
Yeah, these days I'm downtown guy myself.
Dan and I
there for work, so I'm on the strip.
I've only stayed at the Tropicana.
Oh, that's yeah. Well, fair. I've stayed at the MGM across the street from the Tropicana.
Soon to say RIP to that place, man. That's a great casino.
Every single time I've stayed downtown for the first like half dozen times I stayed at the Vegas Club because rooms, if I wasn't even getting them for free, I was paying at most like $25 a night.
And no resort fee too.
Yeah. No resort fees. It was
$25.
I can't tell you how many times, and I was getting so many free nights because we would gamble there for a good 12 hours a day. Like, if we were up drinking, gambling, we'd walk the street a little bit. We would normally come back to the Vegas Club and keep playing like blackjack or three card or even Pai Gow for a little bit at that place. And then when we found the $2 roulette at Gold Coast,
Gold Spike,
a
casino. Yeah,
that's right. Gold Spike. That was like amazing to be able to figure. And they were doing 16-ounce pours of Guinness.
Yeah, like one of the dealers would go get it for us. Like they'd be like, "You guys want another drink?" And then they go pour it. It was amazing.
I was always drinking Corona because that was the free, decent tasting beer that was available.
Is that recently? Because yeah, nowadays
no, it's not recently.
Nowadays, I'm so old. A lot of the you're probably the youngest on the show. A lot of places now.
Rob's got like a kid my age.
Yeah.
Oh, do you? Okay.
I'm pretty
you
sure don't Ken's show. The youngest.
Oh, you definitely don't show it, Rob. That's a compliment for you. Yeah. But a lot of the casinos don't even give free drinks anymore, which is the worst thing about it.
You have to play for so many minutes for them to give you a free drink.
Yeah, for everything.
That's what they told me last time.
That used to be just for video poker. Now it's everything.
The first time I was in Vegas, it was for work, and the group I was working with, we got along great, but our goal was to get a free drink in every casino up and down the strip. So we would go to a casino and play until they gave us free drinks and then go to the next casino.
It's amazing. Those are probably $40 or $50 free drinks right there.
Yeah. We started up at the Bellagio and ended up at the Mandalay Bay, and that was kind of the end of our night.
Now, I don't know if it's still the case, but I was there in March of last year down at the plaza downtown. And especially late at night, there was like one waitress working, and she was making the rounds every 20 minutes for everyone. She knew where everyone who was drinking was at, and she'd come around every 20 minutes like clockwork, a lot of times with what you were already drinking.
Which was how you make your tips. Amazing. Smart girl. Yeah, that's...
Well, that was the same thing, Dan, when we were in Vegas Club, and we were playing, because this was just when virtual dealers became a thing. So they would have like the big virtual dealer machines with like six seats. And I can't tell you how many times there was a virtual blackjack dealer or virtual blackjack machine we were playing at. And every 15 minutes on the dot, a new round would come for everybody at the table. And this was the same place that they were serving me like 8 ounce Killians on draft. And I literally, I'm like, can I get a bigger glass? Like it's not, I just need to like be able to drink more instead of you coming every,
you a lot more than if it's me.
Like the thing is that every time she would stop by us, and she would stop by every 15 minutes, there was 6 to 8 of us. So she was making $8 just on our little table every single time. So she was making $32 at one of the slowest casinos downtown just for us. So she was smart enough to get me a bigger glass and go from there. But even that was back in 2008, probably.
It was a long time ago.
Better on Draft is made possible thanks to our sponsor, North Center Brewing in Northville, Michigan. Open Tuesday to Sunday, North Center provides a fun atmosphere with amazing beer. Try their Bobby English while playing shuffleboard, or wash down their classic Reuben sandwich with a glass of painkiller. Find them online at northcenterbrewing.com. Better on Draft is sponsored by Zatuna Liquor. Located on Rochester Road in Rochester Hills, go visit Jack and see why he is known as one of the best beer and bourbon stores in the state. A large variety of singles, wine, booze, and snacks, Zatuna Liquor is your one-stop shop before a party. Better on Draft is sponsored by Craft Tapped. Currently located in 11 states, including Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, Craft Tapped is a monthly subscription that pays for itself after just one visit to your local brewery. Use the code BOD at checkout and receive 15% to any membership, not just for Michigan fans. For Michigan fans, get 50% off your first 2 pints at each venue you go to, including Better on Draft-sponsored North Center Brewing and 2022 March Draftness winner Copper Hop in St. Clair Shores.
So I know this is off the Vegas topic, but I was just at an Embassy Suites in South Carolina for that conference, and I don't know if you know, but
do they still do business hours?
They do. They have the business
manager's social reception.
The manager's reception. So you get 2 drinks between 6 and 7:30 every night.
Only two.
Which I mean, that could be $20 right there. Like that's it's a decent deal. But I'd go and stand in line, and I'm like, can I just get both of them at the same time? Especially since like the night I got there was like 20 minutes before the manager's reception was over. So I like took my suitcase right up to the bar. We're gonna get those two free drinks.
The Des Moines bartender knew me. I don't know. It's been a while since I've been there, and I would go down and play StarCraft and get the free drinks. And yeah, he just knew that I'd show up.
There was a buddy of mine's bachelor party
And I was planning it, and we needed like a hotel and all this stuff. And I'm like, you know, we could do an Embassy Suites. And when we chose the Embassy Suites, we got there and they had, and this was there, there was no two drink limit. It was just drink and drink and drink. So I managing the entire thing, I collected money and I gave the guy $100 tip. And I said, you see all these people in this corner, that's my table. Let's make sure that we're fed and good to go. And they'll still be tipping you throughout the night. And this guy's like, you got it. And it didn't matter how many people were waiting. Like, he knew what people were drinking before the end of it. And was like, I think he had like backups of like, you know, diet rum and diet Cokes and open bottles ready to go. Like
things.
Yeah. It's like, all right, you go. You're good. You're good. You're good. And yeah, we drank 2 hours straight before then we went to have dinner. those are definitely some of the, I don't know what it is, but maybe that's kind of what we're talking about with the craft beer scene, is that it's just things that really don't exist anymore. Going to Windsor because you're 19 is probably not a big thing that it used to be, because you have to have a passport just to get into Windsor these days.
When you guys talk about Windsor.
You don't, though. You have to have the passport.
Enhanced card. License.
The enhanced license, yeah. Or that.
You guys are talking about the nice Windsor, right? Not like the old late 90s, early aughts Windsor that was.
No, I'm talking about the late 90s.
Okay, late
90s,
yeah.
All right. I'm talking about the old Windsor.
Yeah, that was amazing.
The Windsor now is kind of nice.
Yeah, it's not a shit show full of 19-year-olds from America anymore.
Yeah,
it was not everyone's going to Don Cherry's and drinking 19
years. It used to not be nice. Yes.
I'm pretty sure that's the bar that she left us at.
Don Cherry's. I am Windsor Music Cafe Reactor. Yeah, I miss those days.
I remember
so friends that like was, to go to the strip club too.
The Ugly Horse Saloon, like that.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember the exact.
I think it's the Ugly Horse Saloon or something like that. I remember always going to Peppers. Like that was the spot to go at the beginning was Peppers. Yep. And because I always had to be the babysitter, I was always the DD, and my fee was a pitcher of beer at Peppers. Because what's a pitcher of beer at 9 p.m. when we're leaving back at 4 a.m.? Like,
right.
Like I'm sober as a bird by the time the night's over. So that was my fee was the pitcher at Peppers. The Honest Lawyer, I remember everybody always wanted to go to with the little bowling alley at the bottom. I think just drinking culture had such a weird ebb and flow during the aughts. When beer pong was huge in that 2000s to early 2010s era, like everybody was playing beer pong, and you had Beer Fest that came out. So everyone wanted to drink from the boot, Das Boot.
that's right.
You know how we did not have like a herpes epidemic from playing beer pong and sharing cups and reusing cups.
Yeah. There wasn't social media like that back then, so nobody talked about it.
There was still MySpace, and there was still like AOL and Messenger, and people were still out and available to talk to everybody. It's not as easy. I mean, Twitter is only 2007, 2008, so
I did build a photo sharing site back then because we had one of the early digital cameras.
Oh man. So everyone could get all their photos off of your.
Yeah. So my family could get their photos of my kids and stuff.
That's what that it was
is,
for.
That is how old I am. I had a digital camera in 98. Kids in 00.
Yeah. And I mean, even then, like 04, 05, Facebook was still like just starting. So people were on Facebook at that time, poking each other. Playing each other and Bejeweled and all that weird stuff of the early 2000s, but before our parents joined Facebook. So yeah, I disagree with your sentiment that social media was not there then, especially for people of my age.
Not when I was going, we'll put it that way.
Yeah, that wasn't in the 90s, Ken.
There was no,
I wasn't
when
talking
I was going
about
to Windsor.
I don't know if you know this, Dan, but when I say drinking culture of the aughts and the early 2010s, that wasn't when you were in high school in the 60s dodging the draft. Like that time, social media was still big. That's how you figured out where frat parties were if you didn't know how to find frat parties. I was smart enough just to, all you did was like walk down MAC at Michigan State and look for a house of a bunch of people. And you're like, well, they're not going to know everyone. So I'm going to go in there and say, you know, Steve.
They got a keg out front? Yeah, I'm going there.
Yeah, have $5-$10 on you all, at all times, cash.
Did you literally say Steve every time?
Oh, hell yeah. Or Jeff. Steve or Jeff.
Would you actually get asked? I remember.
Oh, my God, that's awesome. I remember
getting asked. If I'm chatting with somebody, they'll be like, oh, who do you know here? And I'm like, oh, I met a guy named Jeff, and he told me to come on down to this party. And that was just it. Like, that's how I got away with it, because they didn't care. I paid cash for my cup, and I drank my beer, and I didn't act a fool. Like, that's really the only rules you needed when you went frat house party jumping at Michigan State. I could not figure out Michigan's like where the parties were at U of M the few times I went to Ann Arbor, but like Michigan State was just so easy. Like, you just walk down Grand River, you turn on any street, and
that's the Mac, man. Mac is wonderful.
Now, see, I got yelled at because I called it Mac once, and it's MAC. Like, somebody vehemently told me to never call it Mac, or they'll know you're not from around there.
I do not think that is correct. At Miami, at least, it was definitely the Mac.
This was Michigan State, and this was definitely the MAC. And that's Dan knows our friend that Brent Steep told me. And I trust him for that specific thing, because he's the one that said, don't do that. Call it the MAC and you're good to go. That's how they know you're on an out of towner if you call it the Mac.
Well, you would have been okay in Oxford, I guess.
I would have had to maybe used a more pronounced name like Theodore. I knew
it does sound fancy, right? But it's in Ohio in the sticks, so it's really not fancy.
Hey, not Oxford in London or in England? Is that not what we're talking about? I thought that's what we were talking about.
We're talking about Western Ohio, right on the border with Indiana. Like,
so back to what I was saying, that early 2000, like, there was I'm going to be honest, it was probably like an over drinking culture at that point. Like, everybody was drinking, chugging, beer pong, flip cup, like beer games were big at that time. And now, as the next generation is entering into the alcohol drinking world, people are not only drinking less, but they're drinking so many different things that the macros aren't necessarily catching up with the trends. And I think I don't know why. And maybe it's because like weed is available to everyone. Well, Wendy, you're ready to talk. Go for it.
So I'm just curious. We all had our drinking games. Are there weed games that they play now, or?
Weed games.
That sounds horrible.
Like,
I don't think you can do that.
Is there smoking games that they play? Like, we had like Edward 40 hands and beer pong and flip cup, and there were so many games that we would play at parties. Do they do something like that when they're smoking out? I'm just wondering.
Picking a movie.
Now if you are last in flip cup, you have to like smoke some fentanyl.
That's what? Right. We don't know it's if it's laced with anything. You're gonna smoke this. So.
I don't think he did that. I actually looked up, and by the looks of it, it looks like it is just a bunch of random things to do. Like, the weed game is play video games,
you smash a whole bag of Funyuns.
Stoned musical chairs. Like, all drinking games involved drinking. Like, the whole point was to drink or not drink.
My experience with the weed game is try to go 30 minutes without going to the fridge for another beer.
I mean, that just
sounds like an impossible game.
That's just Thursday nights for me.
We had Go-Go Gadget.
What's Go-Go Gadget?
So if you were sitting around and everybody was smoking and you wanted to get up, you wanted something, you would say Go-Go Gadget, whatever. And the next person that got up had to bring it to you.
Oh,
that's not bad.
I thought it was going to be some interesting beer game I never heard of.
But do you get the Go-Go Gadget reference?
I do get it. Oh, yeah. I am familiar with Inspector Gadget.
I'm not sure.
You are kind of young. Age
gap reference. I'm like, I still to this day will be sitting by myself and be like, Go-Go Gadget soda. Hoping that somebody will bring me something to drink and then I got to get up and get it myself.
Listen, I did see the Matthew Broderick Inspector Gadget movie. I understand what you're talking about.
That does
about.
Not count at all.
Oh, yeah, that's that, what no. we're talking about.
That did not actually exist.
It did exist. When it
came out.
No, it does not exist. We got to erase it.
It had the girl from Eurotrip.
It did.
It did. Emmy.
So wait, so we aren't talking about the Matthew Broderick cinematic classic?
I'm talking about the original cartoon.
I know. I'm being Ken. I'm being over.
Are we talking about Matthew Broderick? Aren't we talking about war games? I mean, what's going on here?
That's right. Do you want to play a game?
Listen, talking about glory?
If we're talking about Matthew Broderick, we're talking about what happened to the never sequel of Godzilla, where there was the eggs at the bottom of Madison Square Garden. Like,
what, the never sequel of Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Yeah. That was Deadpool 2. Didn't you see
Thank you for bringing that up. What, I didn't want to be the one who was like, we're not going to talk about Ferris? Oh. Batch Brewing is having a Winter Olympics Leisure Games. I'm so excited. I want to do it, but I'd be the one that have to race around the building.
The Leisure Games are, so it's not like beer pong and stuff. It's something else, isn't it?
No, there's I'm going to look it up because there's lots of fun stuff.
Because last year around this time, because we talked about it on the Dark Horse episode, they had like a whole beer Olympics where there was like beer pong and flip cup and all this stuff at Dark Horse that you could play and compete, and you brought in teams. Toots is asking us, why aren't we talking about the Matthew Broderick hit Election?
Oh my gosh, that was an amazing movie.
I should tell you my, I think, hilarious Dark Horse story.
Go for it.
My son was at a swim meet up in Michigan State, and it was great. We had a wonderful time. And then on our way back, I said, well, let's stop at this brewery I know. So we stopped at Dark Horse. There were all these motorcycles out front. There was a skateboard shop on the other side of the parking lot. He's like, what is this place? So we went in. He had a wonderful meal. I had a great beer. We drove home. But yeah, that was our Dark Horse experience. So he saw those motorcycles.
What was that?
He didn't play Nickelback, did he?
Oh.
They would get very upset there back in the day.
And it was back in the day. So
no. I'm still disappointed that I never got a tattoo at Dark Horse.
I've been there a bunch of times. I honestly would get a beer and then head on up the road or down the road, depending on which direction I was traveling. Like, get a beer and some food. Because it was a great place.
I always remember. I remember seeing that sign, like the sign on the jukebox about no Nickelback at Dark Horse, and I didn't realize because I'm actually looking for that sign, and apparently Nickelback has an album called Dark Horse, and that's just even funnier to me than anything.
Were they the ones who did Smell It? Like Smells Like a Safety Meeting?
The beer? I think so.
Okay.
They do.
I love that beer.
Apparently, as I'm going deep into this rabbit hole, in 2010, Nickelback approached Dark Horse Brewery about having their beer featured in a video, which would have meant great exposure for the small Michigan brewery. They declined, however, as none of us at the brewery really care for the band.
Smart move. They'd probably be in bankruptcy now.
Right. I did love that location. I
think they are. They were.
Oh, shit.
I think that's why Roke purchased them.
May have actually helped.
Yeah.
All right.
People say they hate Nickelback, but I actually think they don't.
I think that's Nickelback. I think there is a massive contingency of people that hate Nickelback because people have been told to hate Nickelback.
Yeah.
So that's the thing to do. I'm pretty sure nobody really knows maybe like a handful of Nickelback songs. So like Nickelback's just the brunt of the joke. I feel like I watched like a little Vox thing about the history of the meme of Nickelback and like how it became like the world's most hated band.
They were like, they were the first one where they released the same song twice and someone caught them.
What was this song? I need more information here because.
Yeah, right.
I never understood why I didn't like them, but I just thought it was because all their music sounded the same. But I have other bands that I like that their music is all very similar.
I mean, have you ever heard of a Rancid song? They all sound the same.
Yeah, well, I mean. Yes,
that's every punk song. What are you talking about?
No. Each punk band has their own little like voice and sound. But I remember listening to some song on the radio. I'm like, man, this sounds like a fucking Rancid song. And sure as shit, like it was a Rancid song. And the next time, like I remember when I was using Pandora back in like the early 2010s, and I remember putting on like Billy Talent Pandora, and the song comes on, I'm like, man, that sounds like a Rancid song, and it's a completely different song, never heard of it, Rancid song. I'm like, all right, yep, they just got a sound. Like,
so the two songs were How You Remind Me, which no one knows, and Someday, which no one knows. So
wait, I know How You Remind
Me. Everybody knows How You Remind Me.
This is that the
photograph?
No, that's Look at This Photograph. No,
that's the
other. That's their other song.
I'm worried about how many lyrics similar.
Anyway, How You Remind Me and Someday were the two that apparently like, and so there's even a YouTube video of the two like lockstep playing.
You gotta
really similar.
You gotta remember, Dan.
That's awesome.
At that time, even still, like MTV was a massive music platform, and everyone was watching MTV. So you were watching MTV for TRL, which Nickelback was always on TRL. You were listening to it when it was playing on Much Music. If you played the Much Music music video channel,
that's Canada, like, man.
It is Canada, but a lot of people got it down here in Michigan. So,
yeah,
all right. So,
pretty common thing.
I'm not going to lie. I am not a fan of Nickelback. I think all their music sounds the same, but 3 Days Grace was opening for them one time. So I let a boyfriend that I was seeing talk me into going to see their show. They're actually really good live. Like, it's an interesting show to watch.
3 Days Grace or Nickelback?
Both.
Okay.
What's that one 3 Days Grace song?
Oh man, I could not do that. But if I Google it, I'm sure.
It was an animal. Is that the one?
I hate everything about you.
Which one?
That's
animal. Animal. I have become, and I hate everything about you. So they are not a one-hit wonder.
So the original singer, 3 Days Grace with Apocalyptica, blows anything from 3 Days Grace out of the water.
Dan,
Dan
definitely did like a "Well, actually" to us talking about.
Yeah, I just did.
I totally did. Different singers for 3 Days Grace because I remember I was devastated when the first guy left.
But the first guy did a song with Apocalyptica, which was pretty amazing. Well, actually,
the original lineup of 3 Days Grace was much better than what they came off with after the lead singer left. Hold on, I gotta put up that those. Well, actually, go on, Wendy. I'm just being dumb.
So I just have a question about that, because I ran into something on one of the social medias where this guy was like totally confused by the Dixie Chicks, because the original lead singer of the Dixie Chicks had passed away, I believe. And he was like really confused that the Dixie Chicks had a different lineup when they became popular than what the original band lineup was. Is it not normal for bands to change people out?
I mean, Faith No More had Courtney Love as their lead singer at one point, so I think it's pretty common.
There used to be four members of Destiny's Child.
Yeah.
Right?
There used to be four members of Boyz II Men, too.
Like, I was like, I'm really surprised by this, because bands change people all the time. So, I mean, two of the three people were still the original members. So I was confused by it. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Why is that surprising? But I just wondered if it was just me or.
And be careful. They're not called the Dixie Chicks anymore, because that's,
I know, they're the Chicks.
Triggering of, you know, people that don't matter. So,
I mean, that's kind of their decision. They pissed off plenty of people back in the early 2000s being against W. So I feel like they, well that, and I mean, they probably, everyone didn't want them to call themselves the Dixie Chicks because they weren't part of that culture anymore. They weren't, you know, singing the way that they want them to sing about the stuff that they want them to sing. So I'm guessing that was just more of a, not necessarily a triggering thing as much as that's just not who they are. Like, you can't go up against W and then call yourself the Dixie Chicks. Like, it's almost sounds counterproductive.
What could be more Dixie than Texas?
I was trying to think of like a band that's lasted a very long time that really hasn't added or removed too many people. And I'm going to be honest, the one band that comes to mind is the Bare Naked Ladies. Like, they had their lineup of five, they lost Stephen Page, and then they're a lineup of four. Like, nobody is left or come in other than Stephen Page, except for like the first year of the band.
Matchbox 20 only had one person change out too.
What's that, Wendy?
Matchbox 20 only had one person change out too.
Matchbox 20 and Google Dolls are in the same grouping that I feel is that everybody knows the lead singer and that's it. Like, Johnny Resnick and Rob Thomas. Like, I could not name another person of either band, yet I could probably sing the entire Dizzy Up the Girl album from start to finish without missing a beat. So
that was a good album, but I know all the Matchbox 20 guys, but I was actually saw on one of the social medias, there was a guy who was like interviewing people on the street, and he ran into Rob and Paul from Matchbox 20, and he was asking him questions, and they were talking about the fact that he had no idea who they were, and they were like, yeah, we're in this band, you know, like the greatest pop rock band of the 90s or whatever.
On our Twitch page, Caprisa 98 says the Blues Traveler. And as I look at the Blues Traveler, that looks like a very, that's everybody that's in the band and that's it. Like,
yeah.
Well done.
That's a pretty good call right there for a band that stayed together for, let's see, they've been going since 87. So 37 years. The bassist, I mean, you can't yeah. fault, like, they didn't leave the band. They passed away.
I mean, so. They did, but
I feel like that's a little bit different than like creative decisions, or we went in a different direction.
Needed a solo career as a bassist.
Yeah, like that's definitely, God, I saw Blues Traveler live with the Bare Naked Ladies, and that was a really good concert show to see, for sure. Dan, you said Seven Dust? How long have they been going on for?
Shit, mid-90s.
I remember they kind of came in with the new metal era of Limp Bizkit, Korn,
100%
Slipknot. And like they kind of just always played second and third fiddle to a lot of the bands that really creeped out of that era.
But like they're the only ones outside of Slipknot. They're like the only new metal band really left. Maybe Korn too.
Limp Bizkit's back, and
no one cares. Let's be honest.
Oh, I don't know if you saw that. What's the big concert? Coachella in Chicago?
It's definitely not Coachella, because that happens in Coachella.
What was that big return Ravinia concert that they did in Chicago? And it looked like Fred Durst looked like some Gen X dad with his like white goatee.
Oh, you're talking about the Perry Farrell started festival. I can't think of the name of it.
Ravinia. Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Capri Sun. Apparently, we have a music person in our chat. Lollapalooza.
Lollapalooza.
If you saw, you can go see that.
Wait, is that Ray?
It might be Ray. I don't know for sure. We do know a person that we reference as Capri Sun. But I could easily tell you like that show is like that Limp Bizkit Lollapalooza. Like the crowd was huge behind it. Everybody was like for it. Like that was a mass, like you saw Limp Bizkit. Sure, they ain't selling out anywhere anytime soon, but they are still very popular for what they were.
Listen, it's all about the he said she said bullshit.
I feel like that is the spot right there. I am gonna end this episode 340 Better on Draft Podcast. Folks, if you heard us at the beginning, as we mentioned, we are taking a hiatus. The goal is to be back sometime in April. Don't worry, though. BetterOnDraft.com is still moving. The Michigan Brewery Map app still going. Nothing's going to change there. The website's going to go there. As well as March Draftness 2024 is going to be there. And, of course, you could probably see Wendy and I as we go brew a beer for Dingus Day over at Eastern Market Brewing. So go check that out. Of course, you can still follow us on all of our social medias. We're not leaving. We're just not going to be doing the show for a few months. So Better on Draft on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, wherever else you can find us. X, I guess, is what it's called now, not Twitter. Thank you so much for this amazing journey. 405 episodes in. I feel like we deserve a break. So we are going to take one. We will be back in a few months. No matter what you think of your beer, we think it's Better on Draft. Have a good night.
Cheers.